politically in this country, it's become very unpopular to sort of support sending billions and billions of dollars to the Ukraine. Chinese threat against Taiwan is out there, saber rattling sort of all over the world. Israel's in turmoil. What is your forecast? I mean, obviously there's war on the horizon, fires burning all over the world. What's your sort of macro look at any kind of peacemaking, or what is the trend?
Yeah, so we've seen North Korean soldiers get deployed into Russia.
Right.
Russia's army hadn't fought a war since Afghanistan back in the 80s.
Right.
So they weren't prepared for war, much less urban warfare.
Right.
Even if they managed to get themselves better entrenched in the Ukraine, they're still going to get their ass handed back to them.
Good morning. Welcome to the North Point of View. I'm here with Dr. Kimsey Walter. How are you, man?
I am great. I'm in such a sparkling mood. Unless you ask me a question I can't answer.
Oh, I haven't found one of those yet.
No.
If you don't know the answer, you're going to make something up and confuse the rest of us to the point that we have to go to the Google machine and try to verify the facts.
That's right. What's my favorite dance? The two-step.
Well, in the last two podcasts, you gave us the bottom line. We got a soft landing behind us, industrial real estate, positive sort of in the near term, but cautiously optimistic about the Trump administration, right? We could have some pressure on commodity prices up. Interest rates could tick back up. So, be careful out there.
Mm-hmm.
But then sort of check the box, moving away from the Green Initiative to practical public-private partnerships, right? Long-term infrastructure commitment. So if you haven't listened to the last two podcasts, roll back. But now, Walter, the 25-26 predictions.
Right.
What do you see?
It depends on two things. One, the Fed continues to lower rates as much as they can, which they are likely to do.
Yep. Short term, next 6 months to 9 months.
Exactly. But if we go into a more of a war type economy, and as we speak, Ukraine just sent their first attack missiles into Russia, and Russia shot an ICBM back. And so.
And by the way, Walter, you've done a great job of trying to help me think about where we are right now in terms of the world economy in really a wartime economy. But it's based on trade, right? And alliances.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. The world, we as a market, we're 330 million people, but the real middle class is out there, right? It's in Asia.
Yep.
It's in Africa and, Latin America, other underdeveloped countries. And that's where the 4 billion strong middle class is really centered. So our companies are profit makers. You get a lot of these, ridiculous consultants, management consultants and the like, and it's cheaper to make stuff in China. No, it's not cheaper. We should reshore it. And you've got the, a reshoring institute and all kinds of stuff. Oh, stop it. It's about maximizing profits.
Yep.
And if you want to make a lot of profits as a major multinational American company, you've got to sell to the global middle class. So you're always going to have production facilities outside the U.S. You want to sell to that market based on a cost where your markup doesn't make the product too expensive for that middle class. If I want to sell to Brazil and their income is half of the American income, then I need to produce in Brazil because my labor costs, which are, almost 50% of my costs, they have to be in line with the market.
Right.
So... that's not going to change that much. America's, and I believe this too, and we learned our lesson, but you cannot turn Russia and China away from autocracy and corruption by making the economy better. It hasn't worked. It's, some places are just prone to this and it's very tough. So, we do realize that we need the rest of the world to jump in on the club, and the club is one of global prosperity, and putting all of the eggs in one basket like Russia turned out to be a mistake. You got Putin, and China turned out to be a mistake. They didn't deliver on the things they said they would do to the WTO. And this is the Communist Party. The Chinese companies are acting like any other company, and they're going to India, to Vietnam, sure. to Mexico, and they're going to make their stuff there after the tariffs were slammed on Chinese imports from China, which is what the Japanese companies did when Reagan in 87 did the same thing that Trump did, you know, in 2017. It's, yeah. Sorry, 2018. So, you know, 20 years later, same story, 30 years later. Trade is going to be the big wild card, but what I see the U.S. doing is engaging in what's, and I hate to use this term, but more friendshoring. Okay. And so Walmart said in 2020 that they would import a lot more from India. At the time, they were importing a few hundred million dollars of goods. Now it's something like $4 billion, and yeah. the goal is to get to 10.
Big spike.
And everybody said, well, the Indian companies don't know how to, you know, operate in a global market. Walmart taught them how to do it.
Yeah, sure they did.
Just like they did with the hot dog makers in the U.S. so that yeah. they would know how to make enough hot dogs to scale to fill all the Walmart stores in the country. You know, there's a lot of stuff to criticize Walmart on, but Walmart does teach entrepreneurship, manufacturing, you know, how to meet consumer demand. And they've done that with tons and tons of small companies. And I criticize them a lot, but I, you know, fundamentally, you got to respect them for doing it. And now they've been doing it in India. Apple is making phones in India. Tesla is also making cars in India. And, you know, the future is India. India just opened a new container terminal to the south of Navashiva. All their container terminals on the west side. And they're improving the infrastructure, which was the other bottleneck to Indian development. Folks, don't bet against India.
And, you yeah, know, and now they're the most populated country on the planet, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's going to be, I see, growing trade with India and the political and the economic importance of doing that. Call it friendshoring if you want, but it's both politically and economically a very smart thing to do.
And that helps ports on the East Coast, right?
Mm-hmm.
We've got trade coming through the Suez Canal rather than...
formerly coming through the Suez Canal.
Yeah, now around the Cape, right?
That's correct.
So we've got the impact of tariffs, you know, pushing trade away from China into India, Vietnam, etc. But it's not... it's not the end of trade from China, right?
No. You look at Japan, they had 24% of the share of U.S. imports by value in 87. It dropped to 12%. It did not go to zero.
Right.
However, Japan went into a, was a 20, 30-year long depression.
Yeah.
Aging population
right.
and companies... just making components in Japan and doing the high-end value added to the final good in Korea, Hong Kong, Taiwan, and eventually China. Chinese companies doing the same thing. So China's the second largest economy, and they are in a serious pickle. They got an aging population. They
right.
can't afford the Social Security or the healthcare. And they have companies taking all of the growth, you know, in wind in the sails out and putting it elsewhere. I don't know how the Communist Party will react, but Xi has not put in enough policies and enough things to right the Chinese ship.
Yeah, the real estate's in
yeah.
the, so it's a dumpster fire, right?
Exactly. It is truly a dumpster fire, and I think you're going to see a lot more. The fiscal policy that was put in place so far, you know, bucket drop, okay? It's a lot more to go. So you're going to see that happen. I don't think this thing settled down until China starts importing more from the U.S. and we start thinking twice about having a symbiotic relationship. But the fundamental problem is with Xi. He wants to be a figure of historical significance. I mean, I'm sorry, but when political leaders have egos, they make big mistakes.
So we take... trade, and we basically reshuffle, we're still going to get our goods. We're still going to, because of Amazon, Walmart, etc., whatever we got to pay for our stuff, we're going to get it.
That's right.
And we're going to get it we're going to get it a day later.
And if you're a major American multinational, a global multinational, you've got to sell in the Chinese market.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of counter pressures to things. And the reason I'm bringing that up is one of the biggest, there are two big risks going into next year. One of them is war. You know, Putin is in a lot of trouble. I wonder if 12 months from now, we'll be talking about Premier Putin or President Putin or whatever bullshit title he gave. Pardon my language.
I remember, though, 2.5 years ago when Russia invaded Ukraine, I thought it was a 60-90-day deal and over. And you said, Mark, this is a 2-3 year campaign.
Easily.
And I didn't see it. And again, you were spot on. Now we see, I don't know, a shift there politically in this country. It's become very unpopular to sort of support sending billions and billions of dollars to the Ukraine. Chinese threat against Taiwan is out there, saber rattling sort of all over the world. Israel's in turmoil. What is your forecast? I mean, obviously there's war on the horizon, fires burning all over the world. What's your sort of macro look at any kind of peacemaking, or what is the trend?
Yeah, so we've seen North Korean soldiers get deployed into Russia.
Right.
Russia's army hadn't fought a war since Afghanistan back in the 80s.
Right.
So they weren't prepared for war, much less urban warfare.
Right.
Even if they managed to get themselves better entrenched in the Ukraine, they're still going to get their ass handed back to them. It's urban warfare is very, very difficult. Listen to our military leaders who went to Iraq a few times and, you know, went into Afghanistan. There's a lot of art there that you have to learn to be able to be effective. So Russia has burnt its army.
Yeah.
If they can't go too far with the missiles, the Russians themselves are going to stop Putin. Nobody wants, you know, the rest of the world shooting back at Russia. And you know, it doesn't end well for anybody. I don't perceive Russians as suicidal at this point. But it has to get worse before it gets better. With China and Taiwan, I think that gets a little worse before it gets better.
Okay. So
we're going to be close to the brink of war, I think, for at least another year. Trump says he can finish the Russia-Ukraine war overnight, and he hasn't convinced me. I have my sources who I listen to. There are some very good institutes that talk about these things, and they're folks go out and give speeches, and that's what I look for. And so people who know a lot more about these topics than I do, and I'm just reflecting the aggregate opinion I got from them. So that's going to hang in the background, and what it means to the economy is the government, even under Trump, is going to be more driven by the government than it is by the private sector, because that's what happens in war scenarios.
Right.
You know, it started with Trump in his first term, it went through Biden, and now Trump's back in, but this is the way things have to be. It's kind of inflationary. We are going to slap tariffs on a bunch of goods. You know, Trump painted himself into a corner there, and unfortunately, right, he said he was going to tariff everybody. So the not China guys get a 20% tariff. This will cause a lot of inflation. And I can see that the Fed would have to raise rates again and bring a second recession in by 2026 if Trump does all of that stuff he promised.
Yeah.
And so the 2025 looks okay. We get fiscal policy stimulating the economy. Going into 2026, you still have, unless all of the threats of war are gone, which I don't think so, you'll still have that fiscal policy. What I mean by that is, if you look back in 2023 and everybody thought there'd be a recession, the reason it didn't happen is the economists got it wrong. They weren't paying attention to the spending on construction for manufacturing.
Right.
New EV plants, new battery plants, new pharmaceutical plants, new whatever plants. And we went to 3 times the long-term average spend on construction. That absorbed all the labor force, and it kept everybody, it kept us from going into a recession. That's fiscal policy. It offset the contractionary monetary policy.
Right.
So the war economy has fiscal policy supporting the economy, like during World War II, but the Fed is going to have to get very aggressive to try to avoid the inflationary effects of that, plus the unnecessary inflation effects of imposing tariffs on imported goods. You want stuff made in America? Tell American companies the government's going to buy so much, put the capacity to produce it in place, and we guarantee you 10 years we'll buy all your stuff.
Right.
You don't give them money like Biden did. Yeah. That's stupid. It just goes to the shareholders. And you know, you don't open the door to the foreigners if you don't want them to. Say, you've got to be an American company producing it here. We'll buy all your output. Much easier way to get this going. So hopefully under Trump, we'll see that change in industrial policy. But it's a tricky call, Mark. It still is fiscal war policy versus monetary policy in terms of the effect on GDP.
And I think the thing that is sort of gleaning, you know, pieces of thread through all of this to sort of, you know, tie it all back together is a long-term commitment to the sound fundamentals of investing in infrastructure long-term, not looking at this shiny object over here, right, and become fixated, but long-term investment strategies, alliances with, you know, countries like India, where we can continue this sort of walk toward more independence inside a global interdependence.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. You know, I mean, what people forget is even during World War II, you know, American, British companies were doing business with German companies.
Right.
You know, there's the world economy and then there's the world political, you know, system.
And as you, you know, told me last week, you know, that when we're doing business here in Savannah with Chinese 3PLs, we're not dealing with the Chinese government. We're dealing with for-profit businessmen and women from China.
Exactly. You know, I won't say anything because you know how irritated I am when the media oversimplifies or paints it in confusing terms.
Right.
You know? So, all right, well, I won't go there.
Best behavior from Walter. Hey, as always, great to be with you, Walter. Thanks so much.
Thanks for your time, everyone.
See you guys soon.
Take care.